This is session 15, I believe, on the series on the Tarot series on laws of life. That's it. Also, memory building.
It's been a while since we got.
Yes, it has been. That's this Pralaya doesn't do anybody any good. Anyway, our topic tonight is the law of paradoxes. And so the question is, what is the divine law of paradoxes? And how can aspirants best harness it? You might not even be aware that there's a law of paradoxes. But DK actually refers to it as the law of occult paradoxes. And so there you have it. It's, but that's it. It's what is the divine law of paradoxes, and how can the aspirant best harness it? And we've shuffled the cards and laid them out, and our spread is as follows. The starting point is the Four of Cups, right side up. The counterpoint is the Page of Rods, right side up. The challenge is the Three of Rods, right side up. The purpose is the Nine of Rods, right side up. The endowment is the Chariot, upside down. The destiny is the World, upside down. The Chariot is number 7 in the Major Arcana. The World is number 21, which makes a 3. Then we come to the Pillar of Revelation. The real question is the 3 of Swords, right side up. So we have, well, I'll get to that in a minute. The hidden forces or unseen forces is the Ace of Pentacles, upside down.
Ace of Cups.
Oh, I've got that wrong on there. It's actually the Ace of Pentacles.
Oh, dear.
I've got that wrong. We'll have to redo that. But in any event, so those of you looking at the screen, that's a pentacle, not a cup.
Is it up or down?
It's upside down. Got that part right. And spiritual ideal is the sun upside down. That's number 19 in the major arcana, or a 1. And the fulfillment is the star upside down, which is 17. And that makes an 8. So we have 4 majors, the chariot, the world, the sun, and the star, 3 of which are all in the last section of the Major Arcana, 17, 19, and 21, star, sun, and world. We have 1 sword, being the 3 of swords. We have a couple of rods, 1 cup, and 1 pentacle. So this emphasizes, obviously, the mental nature of things. When we're talking about the law of paradox, law of paradoxes, and it implies that this is a question of perception or understanding. If we look at 2 objects and see them as disparate, it's probably a paradox. If we can look at it and see their commonality, then we have mastered the art of solving paradoxes. Or the law of occult paradoxes. So, with that in mind, then we also can observe that there's 5 upright cards and 5 reverse cards. And this, again, emphasizes the nature of the question, the nature of paradoxes. Half of the cards are right side up, half of them are upside down. What are we to conclude from that? Well, we're to conclude, among other things, that the spread is in equilibrium, half up, half down. And immediately that brings to mind the oldest paradox of them all. Is the glass, well, it may not be the oldest because we haven't had glasses forever, but is the glass half empty or half full? Is our perception optimistic or pessimistic? Do we believe or do we doubt? These are the paradoxes of human thinking. So The answer, of course, is the glass is neither half full nor half empty. It's a glass. Unless you comprehend it in its fullness, it doesn't make any sense at all. A half full glass is only being utilized halfway. It's just like my parable. The bottle is whole. You break it and you no longer have the whole bottle. So that's the question at hand. Is it half full, half empty? Is it in or out? Did we win or lose? You see, these are the paradoxes of life. And they are confusing to the emotions that want to believe in something and say, well, let me know which one it is. But it's not. It's meant to stimulate the mind to think and realize that the solution to any paradox is to put it together and create a whole. And we see this right here in the Tarot. Every Tarot reading we do embodies the principle of the law of paradoxes. Because we start with a point and then a counterpoint. A starting point, a counterpoint. The Tarot itself, as a system, recognizes the paradoxes of life. Here's a point, here's the opposite point. Are they clashing or do they complement one another? Can these two opposites become friends and learn to collaborate? And of course they can. And that's the secret to developing your intuition. All right, so we start at the starting point, the Four of Cups, and the Four of Cups is a very significant place to start, because here we have, as we've seen many times, a tree and a cloud and a hand coming down from a cloud grasping one cup. And there are three cups on the ground level and one person looking at them, probably Sir Isaac Newton. I was going to say Isaac Einstein, but that's that's a paradox in and of itself. Okay, so we have the tree of growth. We have heaven up there, the cloud. We have earth down at the bottom. And we have four cups, one of them coming in from heaven or retreating into heaven. But the idea here is that heaven will pour out its abundance to those who are receptive to it. And the three cups could easily stand for the mind, emotions, and physical body. But we have to be responsive. We have to invoke heaven. So here's one paradox. It's the paradox of the inner and the outer. And this is indeed the occult paradox that DK referred to. The occult paradox that the greatest paradox of all, as I define it in Light and Night. I have a whole chapter on paradoxes in Light and Night, if you recall. But the greatest paradox of all is the paradox between the abstract and the finite. We live in an infinite world, but we live on a finite plane. And nothing in the finite plane is very helpful in helping us understand the nature of abstract thought. We can't define divinity by looking at our own humanity, although we can define our own humanity by looking at divinity. Now, isn't that a paradox? So a paradox is a very ancient system designed to help people learn to think, that was invented by great philosophers and other thinkers as a way to help people stuck in a finite world grapple with the infinite dimensions of life and the infinite implications of ethics and values. So this law of paradox governs all interaction between heaven and earth. So it's a pretty important law, even if you've never heard of it before. It governs all interaction between heaven and earth. Somehow, we manage to discover the infinite and then translate it into ideas and forces that we can express in our daily life. We can become an artist and express beauty. We can become a musician and express harmony. Earth's crammed with heaven, and every common bush afire with God. This is the interaction between the abstract and the finite. This is the greatest paradox of all. And it governs this interaction. So, you know, there's all different kinds of paradoxes. We have to keep in mind that many of the parables of the Christ are basically paradoxes. It's easier for a rich man to, or it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. What? What does that mean? Well, it's a paradox. It makes you think. And any attempt to interpret it in a literal fashion is going to fail utterly. That's the nature and the beauty of a paradox. You have to leave behind you your finite ways of thinking and enter into a symbolic realm where you begin to understand what that means. And that's what the paradox is designed to do. We're supposed to, first of all, understand that life itself is a paradox because it's a finite world existing in an infinite universe. And so anything we try to understand in finite terms is utter folly. It's foolishness. I was surprised the fool didn't come up, but then I realized, well, this is the fool is in every single card here, implied, because the fool is the spiritual aspirant. The spiritual aspirant seems to be a fool. That's a paradox. Okay, so we have this is basically defines what we're dealing with here. We worry about giving and taking. Taking and giving. It's just a transaction. It's an exchange. If you want to understand giving and taking, you can't dwell on one or the other. You have to understand that they're both exchanges. And so the more you understand about the law of exchange, the more you understand about giving and taking, you begin to realize that by giving, you're able to receive, and therefore giving and taking are the same action. And you can think about that. So we're trying to understand the whole picture here. There are no paradoxes in earth alone. And of course, there are no paradoxes at all in heaven. They're just laws of life. So the paradox arises as we try to establish an interaction between heaven and earth. And the paradox lets us harness the duality and see the whole picture. All right, so that's half the story. It's obviously half the story because it's the starting point. Then we have the counterpoint, which is the opposite half of the story. Here we have the page of rods. The page of rods has a hat down over his eyes or her eyes. He's walking out of the swamp represented by the reeds, meaning he's emerging out of the wetlands of the emotions and onto the dry ground of the mental plane. But he's a page. This is an immature mind. And the immature mind is the one that gets stuck in the logic of materialism and has blinders over his eyes and can't see, hasn't developed his intuition. And he's the type of person that has his feet on the ground and his head in the stars, but wait a second, he doesn't have his head in the stars because his hat blinds him from the stars. The stars up here in the final card, by the way. This describes coming out onto the firm ground of the mental plane, which gives us a basis for understanding paradoxes, but we have to train both the intuitive and intellectual aspects of the mind to do this. So this whole law depends upon the mind, not the emotions. There's only one garden we've already had it, the Four of Cups, and that was to demonstrate receptivity and invocation. The emotions have no capacity to solve paradoxes. They just blow them away. Say, why waste time on that? The mind may be tempted to do that as long as it's dominated by the concrete mind, but we have to be very careful to define this in terms of the complete picture. And the movement from the swamp to dry land. The movement from the swamp to dry land. You know, one of the most famous parables, you're familiar with this if you've read Light and Night, which I highly recommend you reread if you haven't lately, especially the chapter about paradoxes. But the Four of Cups, the starting point, tells us also, the symbolism of the cups is, our perceptions of life are all centered in glamour and illusion. The capacity of the emotions and to some degree of the mind as it beholds life is to distort it into illusion, to imprint our wish life upon reality. So the process of learning to work with paradoxes is to see the movement from glamour and illusion to genuine understanding of reality, to the perception of the whole. And that's an important dynamic here to understand. So we have those two cards as the starting point. And then we come to the challenge. Then we have the Three of Rods. Well, the Three of Rods basically describes, this is a mental card, of course. Actually, did I say, yeah, there are three rods. The gentleman here is staring out over the parapet of his castle, looking out into what he sees as nothingness. He can see to the far horizon and beyond, but basically, all he sees is nothingness, probably because he's myopic and needs glasses. But there are three rods, one to his left and one to his right and one behind him. So he's standing in a triangle. And he's taken the dualities and dualities of life, and instead of seeing them as a paradox, he recognizes that they all can be converted into triangles with the apex resolving the other two. All right. My little teaching tool of the equilateral triangle is indeed the way you handle paradoxes. And if you can constantly define the apex, you're no longer troubled by the seeming paradox between the finite and the infinite. Every scientist today, or scientific thinker today, that claims to be an agnostic or an atheist is a victim of the law of paradoxes. They don't know how to blend the two. So they are practicing separativeness. This Three of Rods underscores again what comes to mind is the movie From Here to Eternity. I'm not sure I've ever seen the movie, probably never have. Don't care what the plot is. I like the title. This is the card of From Here to Eternity. He is a fixed point on a parapet in his castle. His possessive, selfish, focused. And he's looking out into the future, into the abstract, into the great unknown. And it strikes fear in his heart. He doesn't know how to cope with that. So that's the great paradox. We live here in a physical earth, physical lifetime. And unless we do some heavy duty work to grow spiritually, as you all have been doing, we look into the future and what do we see? Most people look into the future and they see death. And they consider death to be the great tragedy, although it's not. It's totally inaccurate. But that's the extent of their coping with the unknown, with the what they would call the unknowable. God, the abstract, the universal. You know, see, the old conundrum of looking up in the skies and seeing the stars in the heavens and contemplating the vastness of it and thinking, my God, I'm so small and insignificant. How could I have any meaning? Well, there's a joke. You're looking at tiny little twinkling stars and you're worried that you don't have any meaning. What is the meaning of those tiny little twinkling stars in your life? Each one of them is a sun. Each one of them is a star, probably bigger than our sun, the ninth card in the spread. But to our perception, they're little tiny tinklers, twinklers, not tinklers, twinklers. slip of the tongue there. And maybe they are tinklers, I don't know. Anyway, they're tiny little twinklers, and we think we're tiny. But to our perception, it's like grains of salt in the sky. So this is the paradox, to some degree, exaggerates the distance between here and eternity, or heaven and earth. It creates the illusion of separativeness. But it's only so that we can bridge that, build the anacharana and bridge the separation, and learn to penetrate the unknown and the far away and the abstract. So the paradoxes help us see beyond the end of the nose. The next card then is the card of the Nine of Rods. This is the purpose. The Nine of Rods, there's nine rods, each representing archetypal force. This poor fellow down here, even though he's got a little beanie cap indicating that he's somewhat intuitive, has the exact same expression as that silly fellow in the Four of Cups. Yeah, those cards are almost duplicates of each other, even though one's a cup and one's a rod. One's a four and one's a nine, but it's the same kind of deer in the headlights stare. What am I doing here? I don't understand what's going on here. And what this reminds me of is the book Acres of Diamonds. I know many of you have read this. If you haven't, you ought to get it online and put it on your Kindle or your iPad and read it, by Russell Conwell. And he used to deliver this lecture or preach his sermon. He was a minister. And it's about a guy who hears a fabulous story that there's somewhere in the world there's an acre of diamonds. And so he sells everything he has. He's got a home and a business and whatnot. He sells it all and goes off searching for this acre of diamonds, figuring that if he could just find this acre of diamonds, he would be set for life. He would be rich beyond his wildest imagination. And he goes off for 20 years, 25 years, and finally comes back because he spent all of his money, he's broke, and he goes back home to die, where at least he hopes he'll remember, some few people will remember him. And he gets back to where he grew up and his house that he sold and the business that he sold. And there's all kinds of mining and excavation going on. And he's surprised by this, and he asks a passerby, what's going on here? He said, oh, haven't you heard? They've discovered an acre of diamonds. Now, that's a paradox. This is the paradox. The paradox is that we are surrounded by the treasures of divine life every moment of every day. All we have to do is train the mind to discern them. And joy and goodwill and wisdom and strength and abundance and all these wonderful things will be ours. But until we develop the eyes to see and the ears to hear, it's as if they're non-existent. It's just like, how many people on the face of the earth actually can see the angels that are constantly around them? On Friday, after we finished editing his new book, we took Dr. Lykman over to see Gibbs Garden. And he commented on the way out that there's a strong angelic presence governing, overshadowing this. Which, you know, I had observed that too. But how many people going through Gibbs Garden perceive the angels? The angelic presence. Does Gibbs perceive the angelic presence? I rather imagine he does, but I haven't discussed it with him. But this is the point. Here on earth, going back to the Three of Rods from here to eternity, here on earth, the kingdom of God is at hand. The kingdom of God is nearby. That's what Jesus told us. That's what the Christ told us. And it's true. It's everywhere around us. It's here in the Truro. It's in Columbus, where it's going to snow. It's here in Georgia, where it isn't. The I might be enjoying that comment a little bit too much. Anyway, the point is that the Nine of Rods is tough. We are surrounded by God. We are surrounded by the abstract. The paradox is, unless we make an effort and teach ourselves how to perceive it, we miss it entirely. The idea, the mystery is not that people can't perceive God. The mystery is that they've closed their perceptions down to the point where they make no effort to and deny it. I don't see no fill in the blank. So anyway, that's the Nine of Rods in the place of purpose. It's like the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Every end is a new beginning. Now, there's a paradox for you, but it's one that we've pretty much thought about and contemplated and understand that every end is a new beginning. The whole of the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes, based on that fact. The end is a new beginning. The beginning is the end of something else. You'll notice that my illustration, chosen illustration tonight, in addition to promoting Dr. Lichtman's new book so you get used to it, is the yin and the yang symbol, a fairly imaginative version of it. And, you know, the dark becomes the light becomes the dark. And there's this constant flow back and forth from one extreme to another. We tend to think, well, I've seen through this, and I've seen the light, and I don't like the darkness, and so it should be perpetual light from here on out, no darkness. But that's not God's plan. God's plan is to interact with the darkness so that we redeem it. We're here on earth so that we can develop the skills and understanding to be God's front man. We're meant to discover the archetypes of life, the fruits of the Spirit, so that not only our life becomes filled with them, but that we share them with everybody else.
Plant life wouldn't grow without some darkness.
There you go. Rose commented that most plants are incapable of growing unless there is a cyclic interval of nighttime, darkness. So the darkness nurtures the growth of the plant by letting it rest before the sun comes back up and stimulates them all over again. And that's a necessary part of the cycle of growth. And so in our life, we have to understand that the paradox is, the major paradox is when we see nothing but problems. The person that embraces the whole picture sees all the problems as opportunities. That's a paradox. Okay, we come to the endowment, and we have the chariot. The chariot is, there's an interesting point here, and that is the chariot, look at the chariot and the world together. What is the common factor between these two? Anybody? You have the chariot and the world. What's the common factor here? Other than endowment leading to destiny.
The circle?
Well, there is a, Rose suggests the circle, the ring pass knot in the world, and then the circular furnace in the gut of the chariot. That was that is a common factor, and it's related to what I'm talking about, but it's not quite what I had in mind. Anybody? I don't hear anything. Well, look at the top of the chariot. There's that horizontal line, set of lines, going right through the ajna, the dark ajna, the dark star. So that's the a symbol of flatlining or stasis. Look over at the world, right through her midsection, straight lines. Those are the only two cards in the whole tarot that have that motif of straight lines like that. And it indicates divine equilibrium. So if you understand a paradox in its entirety, the whole picture, you achieve equilibrium. But of course, the bottom line is we don't live in a world that is heading towards, well, it's heading toward equilibrium, but doesn't, it isn't moved by equilibrium. It's moved by imbalance, and then our effort to bring it back into equilibrium, only to find that what we thought was equilibrium is still unbalanced, and so we have to move further and further toward the ideal. Ultimately, the ideal of equilibrium exists only in spirit, not in form. But as an agent of spirit, we can achieve a certain level of practical equilibrium in our own life. But we don't try to impose that on the life around us, because that would be disastrous. It would bring growth to a halt. If suddenly all crime disappeared from this earth, all violence disappeared from this earth, everybody was a saint, nothing would happen. We would all be in agreement. We would all vote aye. There would be no nays. It would be dull. It would be boring here on earth. Now, in heaven or in the life of spirit, it's not boring at all, because it just leads to a greater and greater whole. But you see, we live in a life within a larger life within a larger life. And our connection from one plateau to the next, from one life to the next, is through this process of equilibrium, where we learn to come into resonance with, and this is the message when we get finally to the star, we resonate to spirit. And that solves the paradox. But until then, if you have negative emotions, or even highly excited positive emotions, then you're no longer resonating to spirit, you're resonating to glamour and illusion. And that upsets the apple cart, or the, in this case, the chariot. So the chariot gives us the appearance of stagnation, but at the level of spirit, we would call it equilibrium, balance. But this is where we come to the secret of the yin and the yang symbol there, the difference between the white and the black. It's in corruption that we find the seed of spiritual energy and liberation. The chariot has both dualities, the happy face and the unhappy face, the mask of tragedy and the mask of comedy, problems and opportunities. But then when you look at the chariot itself, this is a furnace, self-propelled furnace based on conflict. And over the eons, it has been busily going around running on the residue of ancient evil, the old patterns of violence and meanness and selfishness and so on, that gradually we're learning to refine and turn into spiritual energy that drives our chariot. motivates human growth. So, as Pope put it, partial evil, universal good. Out of the partial evil, we learn to throw that into the fires of, not of hell, but the fires of our combustion engine, and we use it as fuel, to fuel our forward progress. All right, this is what the Christ was referring to when he said, if a tree is rotten in its trunk, you cut it down and you throw it into the fire and burn it. All right, we find that which is still bearing traces of ancient evil, and we convert it through our spiritual techniques into fuel for spirit, into spiritual quality and force. That's our job here. We believe, not understanding our relationship to the Father, we create nonsense about this. You know, we take a statement like, we were created in the image of God, and so we assume that God is wears glasses and enjoys a pipe after dinner and has whoever's sitting in his right hand bring him his slippers. And we project our own images on God rather than understanding the paradox and starting to look for ways that we can reproduce the divine image in our self-expression. That's the real meaning of that. So there's the chariot. We've by dint of the back and forth swing of the pendulum, we've learned something about striving for balance. Then we go over to the card of the destiny, the world, also upside down. And we have a woman fully clothed in a ring pass knot, a braided circle. And outside of her are these astrological signs in each of the four corners, representing one of the crosses. I can never remember which one. And I'm sorry? The fixed cross. Yes, it does look fixed. So we have the ring pass knot, finite life within it. But we're constantly influenced by universal sources. We're influenced by, you know, the Three of Rods. He's looking out to the horizon. Hell, in the world, we're looking out to faraway planets. Faraway solar systems and the stars. Constellations that influence us in terms of astrological energies. A lot of people think that astrology is a bunch of hooey, but that's just because they don't understand the paradox. They don't understand how we can resonate to spiritual forces coming to us from far, far away. So this is the paradox of boundaries and measurements. We live in a finite world. That finite world is bound by our finite mind, by our own thoughts and prejudices. If we think the world is a small place, it is a small place. If we think it's part of a larger universe, well, then we have opened the door to the larger universe. If we work intuitively to be responsive to the forces of the zodiac in each sign, we have conquered one of the limitations. But as long as we accept the world as defining who we are and what we're doing, then we're stuck in those boundaries. We're forced to think inside the box. We didn't create the box, but we're stuck in the box. And this brings up the whole idea of measurements, measures. Is there any fundamental difference between a molecule and a galaxy? Well, you say size, but if size is a measurement of space and space is an illusion, what's the fundamental difference between a molecule and a galaxy? They both have the same structure, And it's just a matter of size. And that's the paradox. They're actually of identical size in an abstract world. Not in our finite, not to our finite perceptions, but we let that trouble us. We limit things. We say, give them an inch and they'll take a mile. Well, damn straight they will. Give them an inch and they'll take the second inch, and the second inch is a mile long. You see, that's the paradox. The paradox is that we limit ourselves, we trap ourselves in finite modes of thinking. Useful, you know, go to the grocery store and you buy $50 worth of groceries and you give them a $100 bill, you want to know that you're supposed to get $50 back. That's useful in the physical plane. It doesn't help you one bit understand divine abundance and what it means to work with it. Did I just plug my next class Sunday, working with abundance? I think I did. Well, that's a paradox. You'll just have to figure it out for yourself. But, all right. So, the other thing that I can say about these two cards is that the horizontal lines can also be interpreted as the baseline. Keep in mind that when we're working with the pairs of opposites, we define what the baseline is, and we see the opposing forces at either end of the baseline, and then we create a triangle and find the apex, which lets us resolve that. The apex is always there, even if we don't recognize it. The circle, and so we create a baseline out of our ethics, our principles, our standards, our beliefs, and then we link them to the abstract world of spirit. That's the law of paradox. Paradoxes. For some reason, I want to call it the law of paradise-y. But I guess there's a pun there, paradise. Paradox, paradise. Okay. This is the idea that what you see in the physical plane, what you observe, what you perceive, is limited and probably false until you put it into the context that resolves the paradox. So we come down to the pillar of revelation. And we have the Three of Swords in the position of the real question. Three of Swords is a human heart, figuratively speaking, with three swords penetrating it. And down below is all the monolithic forms of ancient evil. And the three swords all reach down into those patterns of ancient evil to transform them into something orderly and structured. So we have here the ultimate paradox of joy in a world of suffering. Think about that for a moment. Isn't that the ultimate paradox? Joy in a world of suffering, love in a world of hate. How do we learn our skills? By overcoming hardships. These are all paradoxes. Who in their right mind would ever go out and deliberately take on a hardship in order to learn skills? And yet that's exactly how we learn all of the skills that we've learned and have been doing so for the last 500,000 years. Joy in a world of suffering. See, many people can't handle that paradox. If you express joy in the face of a hurricane or a tornado or some other misfortune, people will look at you and say, what's wrong with you? You should be suffering, you should be crying, you should be bawling your head off. You should at least be glum and disappointed like the rest of us. No. There's no inconsistency, no irreconcilable difference between joy and the world of suffering around us. We know there's a world of suffering around us because of the residue of ancient evil. But we're here to be an agent to alleviate that, ameliorate that suffering. So joy is exactly the antidote, the power we need to handle a world of suffering. Woe to the person that tries to take on suffering without joy. So the real question becomes, what is the opportunity within this hardship, within the problem that confronts us? What is the opportunity? How can we best convert this? How can we call upon Spirit to help transform this pattern of ancient wrongdoing which still lives within our breast? How can we infuse Spirit into form in this particular instance? And that's exactly what these swords remind me of. They're like syringes poking down into these monolithic forms and injecting a heavenly serum into them that magically transforms them. So through each one of these flows joy and peace and goodwill to inoculate humanity from the suffering that is an inevitable part of life. To the point where we learn this paradox so well, we stop suffering. That's the only remedy to suffering, is to stop suffering. So the real question is, what is the opportunity within the problem? What element of Spirit can I bring in to transform the unsatisfactory conditions of my life? Then we come to the next question, or the next card, which is the Ace of Pentacles. This is in the position of unseen forces or hidden dimensions. And the Ace of Pentacles is about as abstract as you can get dealing with the physical plane. It represents the plan. It symbolizes the plan of Spirit for redeeming the world. And it recalls to mind statements from the Secret Doctrine, Blavatsky, etc., that matter is just very slow spirit. Matter is very sluggish or solid spirit. And spirit is just highly rarefied matter. They meet, they interact to some degree, but as we work in the physical plane and take on our physical duties, we are able to contact spirit and bring it down, and spirit lifts up matter, but it doesn't depress spirit. Matter doesn't depress spirit. This is the great secret or paradox, if you wish. It's when the higher meets the lower, it remains the higher. And we'll get to that in a little bit more detail in a minute. But it indicates that the law of paradox is that spirit and matter are one. Again, we have the opposite ends of the baseline. Spirit on one end, matter on the other. And then we learn to unify them to fulfill the divine purpose. And we discover that spirit and matter are one. That spirit can be called on to spiritualize matter. This is the light entering the darkness, and the darkness is no longer quite so dark. It's mostly a perception, of course, but that's what we've been talking about all night long. We confront our glamours and our illusions, our fears, and we defeat them, we shatter them. The glamour and illusion is created as a result of a paradox, a misunderstanding on our part. And the law of paradoxes is that we project ourselves into life and form, and then we rescue ourselves and liberate ourselves from form, and spirit has completed the cycle and triumphed, and growth has occurred. Growth is the paradox. And so that sets the stage then for the last two cards. The ninth card is the Sun, which represents the light of the mind. We have this big, bright, ebullient sun, and down below is a book representing the human mind. The sun is infinite. Well, as close to infinite as we care to. It radiates out through the entire solar system, feeding and nurturing life here on Earth and elsewhere. Our capacity to understand is the open book. It's finite. The sun is fairly universal, abstract. Our mind is finite. But it's the ideal of the human design to discover the sun within our mind and use our minds as the porthole or the port key to the universe, to the entire zodiac described by astrology, to all the lords of karma, to all the deities in every solar system, and to learn to as much about life and living as we can from these sources. The mind becomes the vortex of equilibrium in this process. And it's our it's our key to infinity. So to develop the mind and the paradoxes that we confront. You know, one of the most famous paradoxes in Greek literature was that of Heraclitus. It's not possible to step in the same river twice. I'm sure you've heard of that. I've used it before. It's not possible to step in the same river twice. And you think about that and say, well, I go down and swim in the Scioto every day. I doubt that you do, but what do you mean it's not possible? Well, you see, he's emphasizing the fact that in a finite life, we define the river as a riverbed. What we're really defining is the riverbed, not the river. Because if you consider the river, the water flowing through the riverbed, if you go down to the Scioto, or in our case, to the Chattahoochee. If you go down and you swim in it today, and then you do it again tomorrow, the water that has that you bathed in or swam in yesterday is now 20 miles downstream. So you can't step in the same river twice, because it's not the same river. It's in the river. The water has moved on. So that's that paradox that we can't. Life is always moving and changing, and we have to understand that this year the energies of Sagittarius are focused slightly differently than they were a year ago or 2 years ago. It's still the same energy, but we're accessing it in a different context. And so its impact on us is ever so slightly different, although the parameters are more or less the same. That's a paradox. It's a paradox that can be resolved. All paradoxes are meant to be resolved. And they produce transcendence. They lift us out of the riverbed and let us behold the actual glory of the river. So the sun is our source of illumination. When we think, we use a trained mind to access the river of thought in the mind of God. That's the real meaning of thinking. We don't own our thoughts any more than we own the sun. But we can train the mind to be this remarkable device or mechanism that accesses the currents of thought in the mind of God. Then we come up to our final card, the fulfillment. The star. The star is a peacock or bird of that ilk, a phoenix, perhaps. And it embodies all the colors and richness of the star directly overhead. But it does this down in the valley, and beneath him is the transfer of those same qualities then into the very ground that he walks on. So again, this is the agent of light, We attune to the soul. We draw in its qualities of goodwill and joy and harmony, wisdom, and we learn to embody them, and then we add them and enrich them to the very substance of our bodies. Okay? So the paradox is very clear here, the higher and the lower. And that's the occult paradox DK is talking about, the law of occult paradox. The higher remains the higher, the lower learns to respond to the higher and is transformed by it. And I can read you a specific quote here. The law of positive and negative relationships underlies all these stages. That which is higher is, as first, always at first, always negative to that which is lower. Then interim changes take place, which make the higher positive to the lower, and lead, therefore, in the steady ascending of the way of life and the ladder of spiritual ascent. Well, he's just said a mouthful here. The star, the soul, is the higher, but for long eons, the personality struts its stuff and is the dominant center of activity here on Earth. The soul is ignored or maybe given lip service to. And so at that stage, the soul is negative and the personality is positive. But as we tread the spiritual way, we reverse this. The law of paradoxes enables us to reverse this so that the soul, without changing at all, becomes the positive dominant pole in our life, and the personality becomes the receptive, negative, responsive pole, and begins to see that everything that's worthwhile comes from the soul. It's the Nine of Rods all over again. We're surrounded by heaven and its treasures and spirits, and the more we discover that, we reverse our own polarity. We become negative to the soul's positive stance, and we become responsive to that, and then we become positive to the environment around us, to mass consciousness. And so the great paradox is how we can be trapped, and then by mere reversal of polarity, liberate ourselves from the trap. And we end up embodying divine force. And again, that's the second half of the great paradox, and that is, how can a human being end up divine? Well, it's by design. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions about the laws, the divine law of paradoxes. Anybody?
Carl.
Dorothy.
I was thinking a little bit about how when we eat food, it seems like a paradox that enables us to... our body changes and grows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nutrients, nutritious work. So, you know, I was just thinking as that as a system that is paradoxical, you know, it's a paradox for us.
Absolutely. The great paradox here is that we've been told to exercise authority over the plants and animals of the earth, to dominate and to rule them, govern them. And yet every day, three times a day, we're dependent upon their sacrifice. We eat vegetables and animal flesh and whatever to sustain ourselves. And of course, that's just symbolic of the fact that we're dependent in the first place on angelic substance, because we craft our minds and emotions and the etheric body out of angelic force, elemental force. And so our capacity to express ourselves here in form is entirely dependent upon the environment around us, and yet we've been told to exercise dominion over all these things. And of course, some people view the fact that we eat these things as dominion, but that's kind of like saying that just because a tiger can track down an antelope and kill it and eat it, it dominates it. That's not necessarily the case. And this is part of the law of sacrifice and the design of nature. We don't understand it necessarily, but it works extremely well. Unless somebody gets into the middle of this and starts protesting that we shouldn't eat anything that has eyes or something, you know. In other words, we have to abstain from all potatoes because spuds have eyes. The seeing eye potato, the all-seeing potato. Okay, good. Yes, that's a good example of a paradox. Any other comments or questions?
Would
Rose.
Talking about the reverse of polarity.
Yes.
When Dion Fortune talks about influence, and either we are being influenced or we are influenced.
Right.
So would that be a
absolutely
polarity?
We're either being influenced or we are influencing something else, and that is a constant interaction of polarity. Either we are negative to this source or we're positive to it. If we're positive, we're influencing it. If we're negative, and you know,
it's mass consciousness. Yeah. How much does mass consciousness affect
right
and you, or can you?
It can go both ways.
Yeah.
The aspirin is learning to be a positive influence on mass consciousness, mm-hmm, by blessing it, by healing it, etc. But at the same time, it lives and moves and has its being within mass consciousness, so it's, mm-hmm, negative to it, mm-hmm, but it's becoming more and more positive. And that's to say, this is what is the story behind the stars. Mm-hmm. There's that constant interaction, and that's what resonance is. We attune to the qualities of spirit and draw them into our life, and that enhances our ability to express them then in our own life. Mm-hmm. And that's the law of occult paradox. Good. Anybody else? Well, that's it for tonight. Look forward to seeing all of you on Sunday, or hearing from you, or whatever, when we do the work of working with abundance. So that's it for tonight. Thank you.